Chapter 34. And I was glad of it. It was a fresh start for me, with you and you know it. I wish I had forgotten who I was, that would have been best. And I very nearly did forget. He was moved by the vibrating quality of the last words. She seemed to be talking low of some wonderful enchantment, in mysterious terms of special significance. He thought that, if she only could talk to him in some unknown tongue, she would enslave him altogether by the sheer beauty of the sound, suggesting infinite depths of wisdom and feeling. But, she went on, the name stuck in my head, it seems, and when you mentioned it, it broke the spell, muttered Hest in angry disappointment, as if he had been deceived in some hope. The girl, from her position a little above him, surveyed with still eyes the abstracted silence of the man on whom she now depended with a completeness, of which as he had not been vividly conscious before, because, till then, as he had never felt herself swinging between the abysses of earth and heaven in the hollow of his arm. What if he should grow weary of the burden? And, moreover, nobody had ever believed that tale. Hest came out with an abrupt burst of sound which made her open her steady eyes wider, with an effect of immense surprise. It was a purely mechanical effect, because she was neither surprised nor puzzled. In fact, she could understand him better than at any moment, since she first set eyes on him. He laughed scornfully. "What am I thinking of?" he cried. "As if it could matter to me what anybody had ever said or believed. From the beginning of the world till the crack of doom. I never heard you laugh till today," she observed. "His is the second time." He scrambled to his feet and towered above her. "That's because, when one's heart has been broken in two in the way you have broken into mine, all sorts of weaknesses are free to enter: shame, anger, stupid indignation, stupid fear, stupid laughter too. I wonder what interpretation you are putting on it?" "It wasn't gay, certainly," she said. "But why are you angry with me? Are you sorry you took me away from those beasts? I told you who I was. You could see it." "Heavens," he muttered. He had regained his command of himself. "Assure you I could see much more than you could tell me. I could see quite a lot that you don't even suspect yet, but you can't be seen quite through." He sank to the ground by her side and took her hand. She asked gently, "What more do you want from me?" He made no sound for a time. "The impossible, I suppose," he said very low, as one makes a confidence, and pressing the hand he grasped. It did not return the pressure. He shook his head, as if to drive away the thought of this, and added in a louder, light tone, "Nothing less. And it isn't because I think little of what I've got already. Oh, no. It is because I think so much of this possession of mine that I can't have it complete enough. I know it's unreasonable. You can't hold back anything now." "Indeed I couldn't," she whispered, letting her hand lie passive in his tight grasp. "Only wish I could give you something more, or better, or whatever it is you want." He was touched by the sincere accent of these simple words. "I tell you what you can do. You can tell me whether you would have gone with me like this if you had known of whom that abominable idiot of a hotel keeper was speaking. A murderer, no less." "But I didn't know you at all then," she cried. And I had the sense to understand what he was saying. It wasn't murder, really. I never thought it was. What made him invent such an atrocity? Hest exclaimed. "He seems a stupid animal. He is stupid. How did he manage to hatch that pretty tale? Have I a particularly vile countenance? Is black selfishness written all over my face? Or is that sort of thing so universally human that it might be said of anybody?" "It wasn't murder," she insisted earnestly. "I know. I understand. It was worse. As to killing a man, which would be a comparatively decent thing to do, well, I have never done that." "Why should you do it?" she asked in a frightened voice. "My dear girl, you don't know the sort of life I have been leading in unexplored countries, in the wilds. It's difficult to give you an idea. There are men who haven't been in such tight places as I have found myself in who have had to shed blood, as the saying is. Even the wilds hold prizes which tempt some people, but I had no schemes, no plans, and not even great firmness of mind to make me unduly obstinate. I was simply moving on, while the others, perhaps, were going somewhere. An indifference as to roads and purposes makes one meeker, as it were. And I may say truly too, that I never did care, I won't say for life I had scorned what people call by that name from the first, but for being alive. I don't know if that is what men call courage, but I doubt it very much. You have no courage? She protested. I really don't know. Not the sort that always itches for a weapon, for I have never been anxious to use one in the quarrels that a man gets into in the most innocent way sometimes. The differences for which men murder each other are, like everything else they do, the most contemptible, the most pitiful things to look back upon. No, I've never killed a man or loved a woman, not even in my thoughts, not even in my dreams. He raised her hand to his lips, and let them rest on it for a space, during which she moved a little closer to him. After the lingering kiss he did not relinquish his hold. To slay, to love the greatest enterprises of life upon a man. And I have no experience of either. You must forgive me anything that may have appeared to you awkward in my behavior, inexpressive in my speeches, untimely in my silences. He moved uneasily, a little disappointed by her attitude, but indulgent to it, and feeling, in this moment of perfect quietness, that in holding her surrendered hand he had found a closer communion than they had ever achieved before. But even then there still lingered in him a sense of incompleteness not altogether overcome which, it seemed, nothing ever would overcome the fatal imperfection of all the gifts of life, which makes of them a delusion and a snare. All of a sudden he squeezed her hand angrily. His delicately playful equanimity, the product of kindness and scorn, had perished with the loss of his bitter liberty. Not murder, you say? I should think not. But when you led me to talk just now, when the name turned up, when you understood that it was of me that these things had been said, you showed a strange emotion. I could see it. I was a bit startled, she said. At the baseness of my conduct, he asked. I wouldn't judge you, not for anything. Really? It would be as if I dared to judge everything that there is. With her other hand she made a gesture that seemed to embrace in one movement the earth and the heaven. Wouldn't do such a thing. Then came a silence, broken at last by haste. I do a deadly wrong to my poor Morrison, he cried. Comma who could not bear to hurt his feelings. I, who respected his very madness. Yes, this madness, the wreck of which you can see lying about the jetty of Diamond Bay. What else could I do? He insisted on regarding me as his savior. He was always restraining the eternal obligation on the tip of his tongue, till I was burning with shame at his gratitude. What could I do? He was going to repay me with this infernal coal, and I had to join him as one joins a child's game in a nursery. One would no more have thought of humiliating him than one would think of humiliating a child. What's the use of talking of all this? Of course, the people here could not understand the truth of our relation to each other. But what business of theirs was it? Kill old Morrison. Well, it is less criminal, less base. I am not saying it is less difficult to kill a man than to cheat him in that way. You understand that? She nodded slightly, but more than once, and with evident conviction. His eyes rested on her, inquisitive, ready for tenderness. But it was neither one nor the other, he went on. Hen, why are your emotion? All you confess is that you wouldn't judge me. She turned upon him her veiled, unseeing gray eyes in which nothing of her wonder could be read. I said I couldn't, she whispered. But you thought that there was no smoke without fire. The playfulness of tone hardly concealed his irritation. Had power there must be in words, only imperfectly heard, for you did not listen with particular care, did you? What were they? What evil effort of invention drove them into that idiot's mouth out of his lying throat? If he were to try to remember, they would perhaps convince me to. I didn't listen, she protested. Hat was it to me, what they said of anybody. He was saying that there never were such loving friends to look at as you two. Then, when you got all you wanted out of him, and got thoroughly tired of him too, you kicked him out to go home and die. Indignation, with an undercurrent of some other feeling, rang in these quoted words, uttered in her pure and enchanting voice. She ceased abruptly, and lowered her long, dark lashes, as if mortally weary, sick at heart. Of course, why shouldn't you get tired of that or any other company? You aren't like anyone else, and the thought of it made me unhappy suddenly. But indeed, I did not believe anything bad of you. A brusque movement of his arm, flinging her hand away, stopped her short. Hast had again lost control of himself. He would have shouted, if shouting had been in his character. No, this earth must be the appointed hatching planet of calumny enough to furnish the whole universe. I feel a disgust at my own person, as if I had tumbled into some filthy hole. Pah! And you, all you can say, is that you won't judge me, that you, she raised her head at this attack, though indeed he had not turned to her. I don't believe anything bad of you, she repeated. Couldn't. He made a gesture, as if to say, that's sufficient. In his soul and in his body he experienced a nervous reaction from tenderness. All at once, without transition, he detested her. But only for a moment. He remembered that she was pretty, and, more, that as he had a special grace in the intimacy of life. As he had the secret of individuality which excites and escapes. He jumped up, and began to walk to and fro. Presently his hidden fury fell into dust within him, like a crazy structure, leaving behind emptiness, desolation, regret. His resentment was not against the girl, but against life itself, that commonest of snares, in which he felt himself caught, seeing clearly the plot of plots, and unconsoled by the lucidity of his mind. He swerved, and, stepping up to her, sank to the ground by her side. Before she could make a movement, or even turn her head his way, he took her in his arms, and kissed her lips. He tasted on them the bitterness of a tear fallen there. He had never seen her cry. It was like another appeal to his tenderness, a new seduction. The girl glanced round, moved suddenly away, and averted her face. With her hand she signed imperiously to him to leave her alone, a command which Hex did not obey. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.